Hi, I'm Nikki.
And I'm John.
Welcome to Opening Up, the podcast where we open up about our open marriage.
Well, guys, today is the day, and we're tackling my kink, and boy, is it a doozy.
That's right. Buckle up, because it's a long, intense trip. Thank God we love each other. Hey, John.
Hey, Nikki. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm a little nervous. How about yourself?
I'm actually quite nervous, to be fair.
Yeah, I got a little bit of a pit in my stomach. So today's a pretty big day. We are diving into the kink episode. How are you feeling about that?
I'm nervous, but I'm glad that we're here, that this has been the number one overall question that we've had from our audience, which is not to cater to our audience, but it was clear that the way we talked about it, our story wasn't complete. And that for us, these podcasts have been really great times to talk to each other about our relationship and to reflect upon things. And it's clear that we need a little bit more reflection upon this.
Absolutely. This is a huge part of our relationship and our history. So you really can't do our relationship justice without talking about this. And for everyone's information, this is the third time's the charm podcast because the first two resulted in
conflict, a lot of conflict.
Yeah, that worked through battles. Here.
And so this, you know, if we're cool, calm, collected today, it took a lot of work to get us here.
Absolutely. I was feeling really angry for the first couple. And thankfully, I feel like my anger has been worked through. I have done enough yelling that hopefully we're going to be able to discuss this in a loving, reasonable manner where we can keep both each of ours and our relationship's best interests front and center. So shall we give it a go, John?
So I think we have described this as my kink in the past. And a lot of that was to keep it generic and more relatable. And I don't think I was really ready to talk about it and the level of intimacy here. And I think as we dive more into what this is, that kink may just not be the right word. And we just don't have the best language for it.
Yeah, I searched on the internet when you said that, because as soon as you said it, I was like, yeah, kink is not the right word for this. But there really is not a vocabulary for a sexual interest that creates a number of challenges in your life. You know, the technical term for them is paraphilias, but that's just so antiseptic. And I don't know what the right word for it is, but I think we'll keep referring to it as a kink because we don't have a better vocabulary. But if anyone does know a better word, let us know.
Yeah, definitely. So my kink, drumroll please. So I have something called autogynephilia, and we call it AGP for short, because honestly, I've never heard anyone else say it out loud, only read it. And these are a lot of sexual fantasies that deal with being a woman or transforming into being a woman or having sex as a woman and generally being autoerotically attracted to being feminine. And that is pretty confusing because it's in my head. It's about what's going on in my fantasy. And so clearly I'm a man and I have a man's body, but my fantasy is about having a different body. And so that's made it very, very difficult to share with a partner. I think it's also because it's all in my head, it inherently disassociates from being in the present or my own body. And then I think it just raises a whole lot of things about my identity.
Yeah, so I think that the fact that it's so autoerotic and can't really be shared with a partner, because while you are typically having straight sex in your fantasies, you're having reverse straight sex, which means that it's a very difficult thing to integrate into a partnership. And then on top of that, autogynephilia is very strongly correlated with later straight stage transition trans women. So a lot of trans women who transition in their you know, 40s, 50s, and 60s have autogynephilia, and the current kind of consensus in the psychological world, and there are definitely people, especially trans women, who are opposed to this, but currently the consensus in the psychological community is that the continual sexual autogynephilic fantasies is what leads them to decide to transition later in life and what leads to their gender dysphoria. And so I think that between the autoerotic nature of it and the potential for, you know, gender dysphoria and the potential for identity transformation make this a really different kink than something else.
And I think that's why we said it's a little bit different and we've been pretty hesitant to talk about it openly. And so when I think we talk about what sexual things does that mean for me, certainly looking at transgender porn, certainly having internal fantasies about being a woman or being transformed into being a woman, cross-dressing or having a more submissive or feminine role in bed, those are all things that kind of scratch that AGP itch. But that's just not a love language that I think is A, easily shareable with a partner. And for Nikki particularly, as has kind of hit on exactly the opposite of what she'd like in bed.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, this is like the complete and total reddest button that you could possibly hit with me. So my fundamental insecurity comes down to the fact that, I mean, to be honest, I was completely in love with my best friend in high school, and he and I held hands and cuddled and spent all of our time together, and he loved me like a sister. And what it essentially came down to, and what I was essentially told from this, was that I wasn't feminine enough to be sexually attractive, and that or that I was too masculine for him to be attracted to. And at the time, I definitely did not have an overly feminine appearance. Now I absolutely do, and that's very strong and core to my identity. I have to acknowledge that, like, my out in the world, like, I am a type A go-getter with strong masculine energy that I use in the work world and that I enjoy. But in bed, I'm very, very much want to be in my feminine energy and want to have a partner who has masculine energy to kind of echo back at that and to make me feel even more feminine. But, you know, when John came to me and told me about this, one of the first times that we ever discussed it, you know, I was asking him, well, how can I possibly be a part of this? And his reaction was, well, you could be a man, like, you could put on men's clothes and get a dick and you could be the man in this. And this was, I mean, it was pretty much crushing to me personally, because this was confirmation that my biggest fear was true, that the reason that John was attracted to me and the reason that John wanted to be with me was because I'm masculine and because I'm not feminine and because he saw me as a potential sexual partner who would be the man. And that, honestly, that was just really hard and really crushing for me. And I understand at this point that is not what attracted John to me, but that's still how it feels. It feels like he could just sense that he just feels like he could sense that I was gonna, I don't even know, but it's really hurtful to me inherently, and it's not fair.
No, and it's definitely not fair at all. And I don't think that was the reason why I was attracted to you, and that there are a lot of, like, many, many
other.
It's
not fair to you.
Well,
it's also not fair to me. It's not fair to anyone.
It's not fair, but I think you can see about how in this tragic cosmic comedy of the world that as two separate people, like, we both, you know, had these things. You know, certainly mine is much, much deeper and routed, but it's kind of like there was just this inherent conflict about, hey, you know, I have this sexual paraphilia, and it triggers everything it already triggers sort of insecurity. And I think you can start to see some of the conflict here, and I would add this sort of other theme that I think has caused a lot of conflict in a relationship, is that this is something that's caused a great, great deal of shame for me and embarrassment and sort of awful feeling. Like, this is my deepest, darkest secret forever. And honestly, it still is. And I think trying to tell a story to myself about this attraction I have, and then some of the really awful actions that I've taken around this, like lying and minimizing and really just being so far from how I am in other parts of my life, it's been this constant conflict because I want to feel good and positive about it, but guys, you know, sometimes this really brings out the absolute worst in me. And it's just tough. It's really, really tough. And so I'm saying it's not fair is spot on, because it hasn't really been fair for either of us.
No, it's just a shitty situation, guys. But John, why don't we roll the story back, and why don't you start with
I remember being attracted to these things as long as I can remember, pre-puberty or during puberty. And when I started discovering my sexuality, this was the loudest thing that came to me more than everything else. And, you know, I was attracted to women and I dated women. I actually was really pretty much a serial dater from middle school all the way through college, and had sex with women, but this was like my secret thing that I was, I wanted to masturbate to more than anything else. And when I went through a long period of being single after graduate school and before I met Nikki, I masturbated to this in secret exclusively. And that was a period of probably 3, 4, 5 years where it was like, go in, you know, like pull the lever, get the reward. And I got to a point, and I didn't really realize at the time, but I was not very sexually healthy, that I felt like I was really addicted to one sort of stimuli, so much so that I didn't really know how to have other sexual pleasure or other sexual engagement. And so this idea of present partner sex or having sexual stimulation from a non-autoerotic source was really weak or even non-existent for me.
Yeah, I remember when kind of all of this started coming out. Well, first of all, I pressured John really strongly into sharing his kink with me, because I had done a lot of kinky stuff with previous partners, and it had always been this source of excitement and joy and pleasure, and I really, really enjoyed doing kinky things with other partners. And so even though John was really reticent to tell me about his kink, I really pressured him into it. And
well, you know, and I don't think that it's like, hey, tell me your kink, hey, tell me your kink. It was, I really enjoy fulfilling my partner's sexual fantasies, and I would really enjoy fulfilling your sexual fantasy. And so it wasn't like it was a generous way to come out.
Yeah, I mean, because honestly, like, kind of the flip side of my fear of not being feminine enough is, like, I want to be someone's sexual fantasy so badly, and that's probably, I mean, that's probably the sexiest thing to me in a partnered relationship, is to somehow be someone's sexual fantasy. And so I was, you know, coming into this expecting a ton of success and to find something really fun and exciting for John and I to share. And I think we'll get into kind of the arduous road to figuring out. But the thing that, like, really struck me was when you were just talking about this idea of having alternative forms of sexual contact. I remember really early on when, you know, this was after you had come out to me, but, like, not too far down the road, when we were starting to realize, like, holy shit, John is really addicted to a single stimuli, and you just not seeing why it was a big deal to constantly be gone in your head and not present and actively disassociated from what was happening. And I said, okay, fine. And so I went and I was disassociated, and I thought about, you know, a sexy fantasy in my head that, and it really upset you. You came to me, and admittedly, I did rub it in a little bit. I was fantasizing about an ex and who I had really fucking hot sex
God,
with.
God, I hadn't thought about that for a while.
And it really upset you. And I feel like that was a turning point for us.
And it did. And that has been a really good... I think it's been a theme for it that I have been really closeted about this and wrapped so far up in shame and try to tell myself a positive story that I kind of lose sight of the overall picture or...
Yeah, the positive story trumps reality.
Yeah, and I agree with that, and that's a big liability that I have. And so I remember earlier on Nikki coming to me and saying, "What is your sexual fantasy?" And you have to remember that this is my deepest, darkest secret. I think I've told one other person in my life about this, a previous girlfriend, two other people, you know, very, very, a handful of people.
Only one
before,
prior to me.
Before Nikki, I was like, oh my God. Maybe this is my opportunity. And so very, very hesitantly, it came forward and said, this is what excites me sexually.
Except for you gave me the like 1-inch version of it.
Yeah,
you told
and
me
I,
that like maybe it could possibly be exciting to wear women's panties.
Yeah, and I'm sure that I kind of like, you know, I probably didn't want to terrify you. I probably didn't want to terrify myself.
But it terrified me, and to be honest, I mean, I didn't handle it super poorly, but I did not handle it with the grace that I would have handled almost any other answer.
Yes, I don't think either of us did. And what I didn't really realize at the time was because this fantasy had been so strong and so kind of so much habitual masturbation behavior around it that I didn't really know that that isn't what sex was. And so this idea of what sex is with a partner or what other people become stimulated by or that engagement or looking at your partner's face and being excited by that or being excited by their reaction, my brain just didn't do that. And that's why I think
or
this is really...
being excited by their body or being excited by anything that isn't in your own mind.
And that's why I think this is really wrapped up in addiction as well. And I fully come forward and say...
Before we get there, I just want to say that like what we just heard, though, was what was so fundamentally devastating to me at the beginning. The fact that I was irrelevant to our sex life for... I mean, I think it was probably the first 6 to 12 months of our sexual relationship. I'm not entirely certain exactly when it came out to like the point of I've pretty much been a sex doll. And during all of this, John has been turning me down for sex far more often than not and masturbating to AGP fantasies pretty much every single day. So I was maybe getting sex one day a week and he was masturbating every single day. So there was a huge dichotomy in his investment of sexual energy. And on top of that, I was not part of his sexual excitement, of his sexual experience. I mean, I was pretty much irrelevant. And that was,
That's awful.
Super painful.
I mean, to be fair, that's awful. And I think when we talk about this conflict about kink, and if you heard about previous episodes, or even just our experience this last week, there's so much trauma here.
So much
there's
trauma.
There's so much trauma for both. And, like, we're not even through half of it yet.
Yeah, seriously. We haven't even gotten to, like... Actually, I don't even think we're through 10%
of it
yet. And
so this fear of, let's talk about kink, or now that our relationship is open and kink is back on the table, is... holy crap, none of us can go back and do what we did 5, 6 years
no.
ago. They just none of us. And I don't think we blame anybody. So I think there's this fear of kind of getting back there. But even despite kind of what was just a really awful when your partner's just not emotionally available or sexually available
or mentally available,
then it's near impossible to have a two-way relationship. And in this one, I was not sexually available, and we worked really hard on it, and we didn't have a lot of money.
Yeah, and this was the point at which like I feel like the first part was like kind of coming to terms with the fact that like holy fuck. John has an addiction to this AGP stimuli, and it is his exclusive ability to orgasm, and it was causing him to make choices that were unaligned with his character. You know, not being a generous partner, not being a present partner, not being a healthy partner. And at that point, that was kind of where you were picking up, like, we worked really hard at this.
We worked really hard. And I think one of my, biggest regrets was feeling so timid about talking about it, or my own confusion or my own shame and embarrassment, that I kind of did this, you know, I'm going to show you just the tip of the iceberg kind of thing here until I got comfortable with that. And then I'll show you a little bit more, a little bit more. So the goalpost kept moving on Nikki.
And let me tell you, I'm an excellent lawyer, and I will badger the hell out of you until I feel like I've gotten an answer. And so poor John went through, I mean, looking back, I can currently can empathize with myself because I kept getting shown the tip of the iceberg, but I also empathize so much with John because John didn't know what the whole iceberg was necessarily. He had never explored this externally. He had never put words to this, and this was so scary. And here I kept being like, you're giving me an inch and I know there's a mile, and I had to fight for every single inch, and it kept getting worse.
And it kept getting worse. And to be fully honest about it, you know, I lied about it.
A lot.
Like, I mean, some of it is confusion or exploration. Some of it is like, I just don't want to say this, or I don't want to share this behavior, or I don't want to come forward here. And so, you know,
there was definitely
deception. And I,
looking me in the eyes and telling not just tiny lies, but big lies.
Yeah. And I, you know, and I'm so embarrassed about that now. And I feel awful because it's not in line with the ethical person that I want to be.
And but
that,
it's not in line with who you are.
But when we talk about conflict and fears of this conflict, like deception and lying and addiction are two of the biggest ones. And definitely Absolutely. Came up this past week. And I did stupid shit this last week that I really didn't have to. But it's just like, oh my God, this is just kind of a glimpse into that. And that's terrifying for both of us.
Agreed. Agreed. And that's part of the reason why we are on Third Time's the Charm. Because lying, even over little stupid stuff, is like a huge, huge problem for me now.
During this long period of time, we would discuss, we'd ask questions, it would kind of shock us. We would kind of get to another place. We would experiment with kink sex. We tried therapy for a while. And really, you just said, we're in it, let's try to hit it. And I think we both went at a pace that was faster than was really healthy for us.
Absolutely.
We didn't know, and correct me because I don't want to speak for you, but we didn't know really what our boundaries were around this, and we exceeded our boundaries and then didn't know it till we went past the lines.
I don't completely agree with that. I think that I knowingly went past my boundaries because I felt like that's what I needed to do to be a good partner. I think that it's really important to know that my side of the story here is this like dual or maybe even triple. Like, on one hand, I am so angry with John for being sexually unhealthy, for lying to me, for having this kink. I am so angry with him. On one side, I am so angry with myself for not being able to accommodate this. And I feel like I want to be a GGG partner, you know, a good game,
totally.
Something else partner.
Generous.
Thank you. And
that's
and
my
I felt like
part.
I couldn't be generous or game here. And so, like, on one hand, I'm mad at John. On one hand, I'm so furious with myself. And on the other hand, I'm just drowning and overwhelm, and it wasn't enabling me to make good decisions. So I constantly went way past my even, like, I feel like they're boundaries, but I'm going to go past them because this is the way that I see as moving forward. And if I don't do this, there's no path forward. So I felt like I knowingly went past my boundaries all the time. I mean, between like letting you wear my clothes, dressing you up, having sex with you while you're dressed up, putting on makeup, like the amount of experimentation does not need to be like, we don't need to detail all of it, but let's just say I went so far past my comfort zone in terms of my desire and ability to have sex with my husband, not as a male.
Well, and you really put everything that you wanted about sex
away. It was irrelevant.
It was irrelevant. And so it's not being sexually fulfilled for all that time.
For
and being
years.
A supportive partner, but just that's not a good sex life for you.
No. And I mean, honestly, like sometimes it was exciting. Like we had some really good sex during that time, but it wasn't good sex because the sex was good. It was good sex because the highs and the lows were so far apart. That or not even the highs. The highs weren't even that high. That's the whole point. But the lows were so low
that in comparison,
that it, like the intensity of it was very high, and that resulted in some like air quote good sex. But that's like unhealthy relationships can sometimes feel really good because the intensity is so high. This was very, very much an unhealthy relationship.
And for a long time, we treated this like a sex addiction, and made a lot of progress about being present, sort of. Learning how to orgasm in other ways,
research into cognitive behavioral therapy.
And that was really helpful to develop.
We put me in a policing role, which is not a good idea, but at the time we didn't have money for someone else to be in it.
And I think we really treated it like that, and that was helpful for sort of opening up my ability to be receptive to other sexual stimuli, including partner sex with my future wife. And that really was a good positive about that. I think you can, you know, as a listener, you can ask the question like, holy shit, guys, what the hell are you thinking? That doesn't sound worth it in the slightest. And
honestly, I would not recommend us to continue dating if I were to talk to Nikki from 6 years ago. You know, I would say cut your losses. John is awesome, but
I would call that sort of phase one.
Yeah.
And the more we learned about it, and we found this term, autogenophilia or AGP, then we started doing more research on what that meant. And we discovered that really this connection or the sighting for trans women saying this was a contributing factor. And you know, I'm pretty pro-transgender in the world. And so
this is
an unpopular one, but sighting, having these fantasies here really made them...
Well, John, I
question their gender.
So I get that this is not necessarily popular in the trans community because trans women in general, a lot of them don't become trans women for sexual reasons. However, I think you are the poster child for AGP contributing. And this is not to say that it is not any more valid. I think trans women who have AGP are 100% as valid trans women as trans women who don't. But the thing is that eventually when we were learning this, I kind of asked John during all this experimentation when he was, it's hard because so much of this was also bound up with lies and all kinds of things. Like it came to mind when you were wearing my clothes after you weren't supposed to, and you broke my favorite skirt. John is a fair bit amount larger than me. So not only were my clothes not the most flattering, but they also didn't exactly button effectively. And
I'm not a size six.
No. And so, you know, I'm feeling mixed feelings about it, but I remember asking you like, John, are you trans? Like, should you actually be a woman? And
to give a sense about how deep in the closet I was or how unwilling I was to ask myself some of these tough questions, I had never asked that question to myself in my life, and I had never really even thought about it. And so here I am for my entire life. I have these fantasies about becoming a woman or having sex as a woman, and never asked, hey, are you trans? And that question just and kind of the answer that I suspected could ruin the foundation of who I knew I was.
It shattered, John.
It shattered me. And I just, yeah. And there was a solid 2 months when I thought, well, shit, you know, all signs point to yes. And I don't know. And how do you know? And what does that mean? But, you know, my only support here is my relationship and just being terrified and frightened. And that's when I sort of put it out there as phase two. So we're dealing with this addiction and deception that came with addiction and already feeling like we've exhausted ourselves. And now all of a sudden,
we were so exhausted. We just fought to exhaustion all the time during phase one. And so now we enter phase two of should John become a woman? And this, I mean, in our outline, I literally have, this is living hell for everyone involved in cap locks. And there is no better way to explain it. So once John realized, holy shit, the answer is probably yes, it was, okay, we need to marshal everything. And we tried to go to therapy together to figure this out.
Yeah, and that was
a disaster.
And that was a resounding failure. That there's just too many things, and I think that a lot of people talk about I think a lot of people and me too want to talk about supporting your partner's exploration and letting them have their identity and really being fulfilled. But I don't think a lot of people talk about, well, if that identity or discovery turns out to something that I don't like or that I'm not attracted to, what is my obligation here? What is my connection back to that person as a partner?
Absolutely. And I was 100% pro John becoming who John wanted to be. And I was also 100% confident that I wanted to have a primary partnership with a man who wanted to be a man and who wanted to be a man in bed as well. And I was very clear and transparent about that. And that, you know, John knew from the start going into this question that our relationship was going to be over if he decided to transition. However, that did not mean that I wasn't supportive. And honestly, looking back on the situation, I could have been more supportive, but I remember you coming to me crying, asking if you could live in our guest room, you know, while you were transitioning, and me feeling like, on one hand, I need to get over this in order to move on with my life.
Totally.
And on the other hand, how the hell could I possibly say no to this, you know, puddle of a person who was formerly my, you know, and
partner,
currently,
yeah.
And I don't know how to explain this.
Of just like the
overwhelm,
the sort of the overextension and the trauma and the roles that we needed both as loving, supporting partners, but also as people that help and ask tough questions and essentially, you know, especially for me, hold me accountable, sort of all catch up on really awful behaviors, deception. We don't know, the goalpost was moving. And it's just, you know, I think about it, I was like, that sounds like it is illegal via the Geneva Convention.
Seriously. And I mean, I remember it was impacting both of us really hardcore at work. Like, I was, you know, leading meetings at the time. And I remember having to go in and ask my boss and saying, I don't know for certain that I'm going to be capable of leading this effectively, and I can't tell you for certain I'm not going to end up breaking down. And for like a week, I had to have someone shadow me in any important meeting. I'm like, for context, this is not something that I do. I have extreme emotional fortitude. I was just that broken down about the whole situation. I felt like my life was ending.
So it was really clear that I had to get into therapy, and that we had been seeing someone as a couple therapy. It wasn't, we try to give this prompt of, hey, help me answer some really tough questions about my gender, and then help us work through.
It was more like I felt like I had been lied to so much that I needed the transparency. I didn't feel comfortable with John just going and doing these things and then reporting back to me or not truthfully or not. And there had just been so much lying and deception that I felt like I needed to be privy to this work in order to maintain my sanity and remain in the relationship. But the therapist talked some sense into us and was like, listen, you know, we can continue doing this, but this is not the best path for John, and therefore it's not the best path for you two. And so John went into solo therapy with the woman who we had been seeing, the two of us.
And to be fair, Nikki really didn't get that transparency.
I got no transparency. One of the rules of John's solo therapy was, I am not allowed to ask about it, and he can talk about it if he wants to, but I'm not allowed to ask follow-up questions. Like, I was not allowed to ask questions, and John never talked to me about it.
I didn't want to talk about it.
So I pretty much went through 6 to 9 months of maybe John is going to become a woman or not. Unknown.
And I think, yeah, and that's really scary, especially since given the intensity and intimacy that had happened through phase one and phase two. And this kind of starts rolling into phase three. And for me, this you know, those 6, 9 months, 12 months of therapy were...
I think it was like 6 months of real uncertainty.
So, so essential for me. And that I asked some really, really tough questions. What is my gender? How important is gender identity to me? Let's ask that 17 different ways because I have a habit of lying to myself about this particular subject. What does that mean for sex? Is this a sexual orientation for you? What does that mean for you in a partnership? What does that mean for your identity in the world or your identity in private? And all these really, really tough questions. And I came out of it with a foundation that this sort of revelation and questioning had eroded all my foundation that I had for, 28 years? And that I came away with a much stronger gender identity as a man. And that it was clear that this was a sexual thing for me, but I really wanted to be a man, and I enjoyed being a man, and that I enjoyed sex in many other forms, and that, yes, this was a kink or paraphilia for me, but it was minor. Now, I think you can say...
I feel like that is not quite accurate, but...
No, I mean, I think, here it is. Like, here's a story again about here, and I
don't know how you could possibly call your relationship with AGP minor.
Okay. No, and I think that's probably a poor choice of words.
But what you're saying is that what you ended up realizing was that although this was an overwhelming identity in a sexual realm, that this was not the identity that you wanted to take outside of a sexual realm.
Yeah, and I think that the other thing that's probably understated in our narrative is that I did this once a week, and I thought about it all the time, and I... you know, navigated the world and took data points and also sat in meetings and thought about how do men act in this meeting? How do women act? How do I naturally feel like I want to act in this
way? How would I feel if I was wearing a skirt in
this
meeting?
How would I feel differently? And like, I had all these data points and I didn't really share them with Nikki, that we were just so exhausted.
That really cannot be emphasized enough.
Yeah. So let's put that one in all caps. That I think we were just so exhausted that we just didn't talk about it. And so I terminated with therapy.
Well, before you terminated with therapy, I think it's important to know that somewhere in this whole thing, I don't know exactly where, I set out rules of engagement for our relationship and that it was up to you to decide whether to stay or to go. But that if you wanted to remain in a relationship with me, number one, there was to be no AGP in our relationship. So your kink was off the sexual table and it was off the discussion table for the most part. And number two, that you had the understanding that if you ever did decide to transition and become a woman, that our relationship would be ended and no matter when that happened. And number three, although I feel like I feel that the understatement, although it was never an explicit agreement, I do feel like we both implicitly felt this way, that like AGP was going to be a minor part of even your private sex life. And I feel that even though I definitely said, listen, I don't have any control over that, I'm not going to police that, I do feel that you took it to mean that like being in me pretty much just meant your kink was off the table, both publicly and privately, even though technically I did not say that it was off the table privately.
And I think I knew that, and Nikki laid out these conditions very fairly, and I think said, hey, this is what I need to have a relationship with you with this kink and this history that we have.
Yes.
And I said, I thought about it. I didn't jump into it, and I thought about it for...
And you talked with your therapist about it for a long time.
And I said, yeah, I'm in that. When I thought all about my quality of life and how much I love Nikki and how good other parts on ours, because as traumatic as this, there are some silver linings, and I think that's probably my classic rose-colored glasses, but communication.
Yeah.
finding alignment in other things like, aspirations in our careers.
We do not fight really about anything else. I cannot think of a single really large fight that we've had that has not been about sex.
And so I think there are some other good things. Like, yeah, I'm here. And that's really how it stayed for.
I call this the burying our head in the sand.
Yeah,
phase.
For, geez, 5 years.
I mean, until like 7 weeks ago or 8 weeks ago when we opened up.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And we talked about it again before we got married.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think there was an expectation for us to check in about it again. And every once in a while we would. But honestly, for me at least, it was probably more gut-wrenching and nerve-wracking because of just remembering all of the trauma that we went through. Just, I don't want to talk about this.
Yeah.
And so really when we said, you know, and to be fair, I think that this is probably one of the bigger reasons why our sex life has not been optimal.
Oh, absolutely.
For us. And I think sort of just saying, hey, okay, I'm not going to engage this kink for years really made my libido plummet. And I'm sure there are other
factors. You see, that's not why I think it's made our sex life not so great. But maybe you have such confidence in that correlation. I have very low confidence in that correlation. I just have not ever seen that correlation translate to reality yet. But I think for me, the thing about this is that there were a couple of ramifications in our sex life. So number one, we like do not talk about sex. We talk about everything else super easy. I feel like in previous relationships have talked about sex and pleasure very easily, but our sexual communication got super shut down because of this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So that's like one. And number two, I feel like I felt like I couldn't ask for things or I couldn't open up about my kinkier side, and I couldn't, you know, talk about what was going to bring me pleasure because I was taking away what brought John pleasure. And so I felt like I couldn't ask for things. And I mean, John couldn't really ask for things. And then on top of that, we were taking away, you know, his typical path to excitement. And so, or his typical path of sexual pleasure. And so maybe that impacted his libido. I remain
well,
doubtful.
I think it more of just like, I am just going to bury that sexual part of me in its entirety.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was kind of a tearing point. I just wasn't interested in sex at all.
Yeah. Oh, I wanted to mention this earlier. So one of the reasons that John and I also just had an impossibly hard time to discuss it is because I'm someone who's like, let's discuss it. And it's super, super, super hard for me to shelve something until it is resolved. And I will have, you know, I will talk about it 4 hours a day, 7 days a week until it is resolved. And that's like not something that's possible with this kink in the state that we are in because it was unresolvable.
And I feel for me, it was also partially resolved that when I think about where I was before I met Nikki, being addicted to one sexual stimuli, not really exploring other parts of my sexuality, not knowing that I needed to do a lot of work on my gender identity, and really thinking about what does it mean to have a kink, or what does it mean to have a kink in relationship, and maybe you should handle that differently in a relationship. And I feel like I answered the gender identity question and I broke the addiction. That doesn't mean that those are done and gone, but I didn't answer what this meant about what it meant in a relationship or what it meant for other sex or what it really meant to have a kink in your life.
Yeah. And I think that what we have ended up finding is that we still suck at talking about it, although this is like by far and away the best we've ever talked about it. High five.
Bam.
Wham. And, you know, we really had a tremendous amount of conflict about what is our story, what does it mean, and how can we own it in a way that respects both of our truths.
Yeah.
You know, I think our truths were pretty far apart for the last week or so when we've been discussing them. And I feel really good about the fact that I do feel like they're more aligned about, you know, our story up to 8 weeks ago. I do feel like we have a pretty similar story now.
We do. And now we have a recorded history of that story that people can eavesdrop on the internet.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about where we are at this today.
Yes.
So clearly, for me, these themes are still sexually exciting for me. And that when we opened up 8 weeks ago, this was back on the table for me. And some of the conflict that you heard previously was really seeing this as a shiny thing and going way faster than I was probably comfortable with, and certainly Nikki was comfortable with or was good for a relationship. So yeah.
Before we get there, though, I want to talk about masturbation today. So you said it still remains attractive to you, and you're absolutely able to have different types of sex. But in masturbation, you've shared that this is like the only way for you to do it still.
I mean, I can, but I feel like masturbation is like a cheaper way of having sex. Sex is better. But it's okay. I don't, you know, I have an opportunity when you're out on a date or something like that to say, hey, I can kind of do what I want to do. And then that's kind of where this habit comes back again to say, well, am I going to look at everything? All right, let's just go to the.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't mean to push you on this, but you told me that you've tried looking at other things and that you always just end up back there.
And that's
I think
true.
That this is an important thing because it's what you're saying is that it's not just exciting, but from a masturbation and from a solo standpoint, it remains an exclusive paraphilia, not just a preferred one, but an exclusive one. But I think in our sex life, it remains a optional to preferred.
I think it's pretty accurate. I agree that it's probably exclusive for masturbation. I find that I have like this itch, and that when it gets scratched, or I feel like we engage in bed, and I'm in a more submissive way, and I kind of like exhaust that the pendulum switches back the other way, and that I don't think I could foresee an immediate world where I would want to have kink sex all the time.
Let's talk about where it is for you before I interrupted. So you're saying that it's still exciting, but that and that it's an exclusive in masturbation, but then that there are definitely alternate types of sex that you are.
There are. So there, I mean, clearly there's still work for me to do here, and that, you know, for it being kind of off the table and it being closeted for a long time, it's clear that I'm not. You know, I don't have as much command of this that I do in other things in my life. And so I think that there's some exploration here, but I do have some absolute fears about that, that this was something that I was addicted to and that really inhibited my ability to feel other sexual stimuli and inhibited my ability to be sexually healthy with you. And that's a big red line that I don't want to cross. And so I fear that if I experiment with this, that it could slippery slope into back into old habits. You know, it's easy to relapse when you've been addicted to something. So that's kind of a danger for me. And I don't think I have this blinder where I don't really see it all the time when I'm in it.
Absolutely.
I also really don't want to feel like I'm going to erode my gender identity, that I'm really happy with where I am in the world. But, and it all kind of stabilized with the absence of AGP. And so adding this layered back in some form, what does that look like? What kind of ping does that look like? Or what's a concern there? How do I take action on that? And I think that's probably where I am today. And so it's exciting. I'm really timid about it. But I go back to this idea of one of the things about opening up is allowing you people to be more fulfilled in more different ways. And so one of the main drivers for us to open up was to have better sex lives. And I don't know what that looks like in 5 years for us, but I feel like I need to have a better relationship with this kink and really understand and fulfill more of my sexual identity and just build on the work that we did and continue to develop that.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we can talk about where we are with AGP today unless we talk about the conflict it's caused.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
As I've mentioned a couple of times, this is the third attempt at a kink episode, and both of the previous two were primarily me shouting and John being like, please stop shouting at me. and, you know, I think that it largely comes down to a lack of trust. And unfortunately, John, you know, fell back into some old habits and told some admittedly small, petty, you could even call them white lies, but some lies to me this last week about AGP and about his, you know, his engagement with the world about it. And that really, really set me off. And I feel like this lack of, you know, well, the lying and then the rose-colored glasses. So I can't even tell you how dark and stormy John's glasses are compared to how dark and stormy they were yesterday. Like, yesterday they were rose-colored. Today they are dark and stormy. And honestly, to me, this feels like a far more accurate representation of reality.
And I think honest.
Yes, definitely. I think you're being much more honest with yourself and also with me, which I really do appreciate. But, you know, why don't you talk a little bit more about some of the other kinds of conflict that's kind of...
Well, I think trust is the huge one. I really don't want to underestimate that we have such... Well, I have such a history of bad behavior around this from phase one, phase two, and phase three that we've gone through that I don't think trust can be overstated, particularly in an open relationship. It lives and dies on how much you trust your partner to look out for your interest as well as their interest there.
Yeah, you know, I also think that there is definitely some degree of conflict around, you know, how the hell do we manage our differing desires for sex styles? I feel like since we've opened up, we've been having kink sex. We've been experimenting more. You know, we had sex with you dressed up and in a, you know, wearing a lingerie that I bought for you and with you very much in a submissive role. And, you know, I think that there's some degree of conflict around the fact that, like, that's not very sexy to me. And I was not actively turned off like I have been in the past, but it's definitely not a turn on. And I do feel like there are some things that I could just like totally get over. Like, if you want to wear women's panties while we're having sex, I mean, you can do that pretty much as you want. The bra is a little bit harder because then I have to interact with it. And what?
Yeah, I'm just a little embarrassed.
Oh, whatever. The bra is a little harder because I have to like interact with it. And if I want to touch you, then I'm touching it. And it's just, it's a much more visual reminder to me of what's happening. But the fact that we are kind of two bottoms in bed is tough.
Yeah,
well, and the thing is that, like, honestly, I've never been super dominant in bed or anything, but I've very much had dominant times. Like, I very much have wanted to be the stronger partner or whatever, but it's always been in this context of I'm not actually being dominant. It's kind of like the sub who's playing dominant. And neither one of us is super submissive or super dominant, but just in terms of the sexual energy, you know, I've been the feminine energy who's being wild and willful, not the masculine energy.
Well, and chaste.
Always chaste.
And desired.
Always chaste.
And that's always been something for you. And that's, it's...
And you just don't chase or desire me, you know, and rarely to ever. And I'm not trying to be mean or not or anything, but.
And I think for one of, I think my fears about or could be potential conflict is that it's clear that Nikki has more, a stronger libido than I do and wants sex. And so I feel really comfortable saying, hey, you can have as much sex as you want as long as you have as much sex as I want. But I feel like my sexual energy is is much more of a finite resource. And so we want to have sex in a way that hits styles that both of us like and we enjoy.
And that can be alternated and mixed and the like.
And that there may be a place for solo or partnered AGP sex. And then you layer on other partners on top of that who also want to have sex. And it's like, wow, how do I balance what is a kind of a scarce resource for me among multiple competing factors, and then really make sure that we're having enough sex between our relationship to sustain that and maintain what we're going to call a healthy and good sex life.
Yeah. And that's definitely something that I had to be honest. I thought this is so silly, but I thought so little about what it was going to be like when you opened up your relationship or our relationship. Like, I thought a lot about me, but I thought so little about you. And to be honest, like, I didn't even consider the fact that AGP would come back onto the table. And like, of course it would, but I didn't even think about that as a potential aspect. And so that was why, you know, our first big fight, which was back in episode like 4 or something along those lines, don't quote me on what number it was, but it's called our first big fight, was about the fact that John drunkenly told me, like, oh yeah, I'm just going to date trans women. And I, you know, was like, whoa, dude, you've never even been on a date with a woman. I didn't even consider the fact that you might date trans women. I didn't even think about, like, this was so far off of my radar screen. And so I asked him for the time being to not seek out trans women, and that he could go and have as much AGP sex as he wanted with another woman, but that he not seek out trans women or men, because even though John is straight, John's AGP alter ego, who is a woman, is also straight.
Yeah.
And so, you know, yeah, John's fantasies are like very man and penis oriented, which is challenging. So
I think, but I also want to talk a little bit about grief, because I think that that's really important. I don't feel that strongly attached to it, but it's very clear that this is not your preference. And so you asked me about a sexual bucket list this last week, and you know, I thought about, okay, these are the things I would like to try, and maybe not the top, but they were pretty much all AGP related.
Not pretty much, just all.
And that
I am not in any of them. There is no role for me in any of them. And that's not to say that I couldn't be the person who you do them with. It's just that the person who you do them with is, for all intents and purposes, a prop. And, you know, like we said earlier, I mean, I want to be desired. I want to be chased. I feel like those are very, like, core feminine desires. And they're the same desires that you share when you are in AGP. But I feel like, and I mentioned it earlier, like, being my partner's fantasy or fulfilling their fantasy is like one of my biggest sexual turn-ons. And I feel a tremendous amount of grief that I'm never going to be able to do that authentically with John. I may be able to be a prop in his fantasy that enables him to have his fantasy, but I will always be at best a prop. And I will never be able to be authentically me as that prop. And that's just really sad.
And I don't know how to address that, but I think it's important to note that is sad, and that is a loss. And that definitely is a drawback for our relationship.
Yeah, it really sucks. And you know, I also, John talked about his fear about long-term consequences, but a lot of that fear comes from the fact that I have big fears about those, and I'm vocal about them. And to be honest, like, the fears of those long-term consequences are probably a good chunk of the reason why we didn't get married earlier. The fears of those long-term consequences are probably a good chunk of the reason why I feel so ambivalent about children. The fears of those long-term consequences of John becoming addicted again, John becoming unsexually, emotionally, physically, mentally available, John deciding he needs to be a woman, those are really big changes that are all fundamental to our relationship and that will all completely change and honestly negate the terms of our
relationship. And that's something that you said that really resonated with me, because I feel that if someone just has a kink, hey, I really want to go be a dom in a relationship and I'm not in it, so I'm going to have a relationship that's about a dom.
I want to go whatever, be peed on. Or whatever it is.
So you're like, okay, you know, we got an open relationship, go find a partner, have a good time, bam, do it. And I think that when it's wrapped up in addiction and wrapped up in identity, that AGP can be for gender identity, and certainly was for me, you know.
You had really strong gender dysphoria.
Which I tell you is an awful feeling.
Oh, my heart goes out to anyone who is dealing with similar things. Honestly, like, even though I have been really strong and, like, clear about what my boundaries are, I 3,000% support everyone being who they want to be, including all genders of the rainbow.
Genders of the rainbow. But I think the sort of tricky thing about this is that there is more liability out there for me, and I absolutely minimize it. But going and saying, hey, I would find a kink-based relationship, I'd find a partner of whatever gender, and we just have exclusive AGP sex, I don't think we could say that that couldn't, you know, lead down a road that could become unhealthy for me or fundamentally change my identity in the world, which absolutely, absolutely has an impact on my relationship with Nikki and Nikki's ability to make long-term plans.
Yeah.
And that's kind of when I come back to this language of what is this for me? Is it a kink? Is it a paraphilia? Is it an identity? And I don't know, but that's something that I absolutely feel like I need to keep in my head.
Kink with consequences.
Kink with consequences.
And, you know, the thing that kind of gets me stuck up on that is, on one hand, I want to protect myself and I want to protect our relationship and I want to protect John. And so I want to be really conservative about all of it. But then on the other hand, part of me says, would John be better off being in a relationship that could, you know, fulfill his kink, that maybe John would be better off in 40 years being a woman? I mean, I know that you say no, which is where I'm drawing my cues from, but I don't want to feel like I am limiting you, because that, like, I don't...
No, that's not your style. That's not who you are. So I think let's talk about where we go from here and kind of what needs to happen. So we said that this is the third time that we've had this conversation, and this is
by far and away the best time.
By far and away the best time.
Well, and it's actually, this is the third time we've recorded this conversation. This is like the eighth time we've had this conversation.
So I think we've come to a consensus that we are not willing to bury our heads in the sand again. That, you know, I've read that don't open your relationship up to try to solve something, because it'll because it'll just hyper focus on any flaw or incompatibility that's already in your relationship. And this clearly, putting kink back on the table for us, forced us, and having this podcast, which is our kind of self therapy session, but totally forced us to come in and do some work together and try to craft this story together. So we said, no, we're not putting this back in the closet. We're not burying our heads. We didn't talk about it for 5 years. We're not doing it again. Let's get healthier. Let's get better.
Yeah. When I was getting so angry, irrationally angry, I finally had to sit down and ask myself, okay, what would it take for me not to be angry anymore? And that was when I realized, you know, John and I have not been having... like, John and I were not having this conflict about talking about the kink in the present, about doing kink things, but that our stories were so far apart. You know, John was really wearing some rosy-colored glasses. And, you know, I feel like part of what convinced you was I talked about it like a fire analogy. You know, fire is an amazing, amazing tool, and we could not be modern humans without fire. And fire is awesome. We have a fireplace. I love it. But fire can also destroy everything. You know, we live in Oregon. Some idiot kids threw fireworks into our, like, most beautiful local nature, and it burned down 15,000, 30,000, 70,000, I don't know, like a bazillion, million acres. Yeah. And so the idea being that, like, I really needed to hear John treating it with the same respect that you would treat fire. An incredible tool, lots of potential, but also extremely potentially destructive. And so what we ended up coming up, or what I ended up saying, was that I had some requirements, and then we'll talk about John's requirements after. And these are very much strategic requirements and not tactical requirements. We haven't made it to the tactical part yet. But, you know, on a strategic level, we needed to come to a consensus about our story, which I think we did today. So yeah. Hooray for that. But then the biggest piece is that, John, I really need to be able to trust you on this issue. And that comes down to three components for me. So the first one is no lying, period, end of story. Big lies, little lies, white lies, black lies, no lying. It just, it erodes the trust so fundamentally. And kind of further than that, being forthcoming with the truth and not making me fight, you know, not lawyering me with the truth that you think that I want to hear. So no lying and preferably being forthcoming is kind of the first component of trust. The second component of trust is me hearing and seeing you treating AGP with the gravitas and the respect that yours and our history demands. And that's a lot of that taking off the rose-colored glasses. That's the whole fire metaphor. And then the third one being that I need to trust that you're going to come to me if there's a problem before the entire world has burnt down. And so not coming to me at the bottom of the slippery slope, but as close to the top of the slippery slope as you can. And I feel like that's the hardest one because we've both seen you be able to really deny the truth to yourself. And I know that these are big asks in this arena, but I need to be able to trust you on this in order for me to really let this go and be at peace with it.
And I fully understand that. I think that's very, very reasonable. And that's aspirationally exactly what I want to do. I recognize that I suck at it in this arena. And I think for me, I need an opportunity to regain some of that trust. And I know that actions speak louder than words, but that really is a requirement for me. Hey, I need a chance on this. You know, this last week proved that
it wasn't great. This podcast tonight was a big step forward.
Well, I'm really glad to hear it. Go podcast where we open Yay. Up about everything. But I think for me, you know, it's clear that I need to continue to gain a better understanding of what this is for me. That I feel it's a half-solved problem, that it's stuck, but it's not a fully solved problem. And so I don't.
What do you mean by that?
I don't know. I mean, when I think about this, I still have embarrassment. I still have shame. I don't really know what it means to me or what I really desire, or how this actually relates to my sex life or all these things and kind of what happened. I mean, there's this dream of maybe we can use this to add some more fuel into our sex life. Is that really true or not? And then try to find, like, hey, how do I balance a lot of sexual desires between us and other partners and this? And so I think it's kind of like completing the problem, or maybe completing is just never going to happen, but get a better understanding. You know, what is phase four, phase five on this?
So this isn't exactly what you said, but from what I'm hearing from you, my sense is that your kind of exclusive relationship with AGP has been when you were addicted and when you were flipping out about whether or not you should be a woman. And you don't really know what a healthy relationship with AGP could look like.
Yeah.
Or if there is such a thing for you. And I'm not trying to say that there isn't.
Yeah, and I think that's a good way
like
to summarize it. And I think also I would ask you to come with an open mind on this. That I you know, you're a best friend. I am more intimate with you than anyone else in the world. And that if I wanted a partner on this journey, and I do, that I wouldn't pick anybody else. It would be first choice or no one. And so I want to come and I want to talk to you about these things, and it's almost always caused some strife. And I know that you have been amazing these past 7 weeks to open up and to experiment and add things and add into our bedroom, which has been wonderful.
And as long as we haven't been talking about the past, our conversations for the last few weeks have been great.
So, but I might come with you with some like confusing whatnot thing that's kind of weird or surprising, and be like, hey, this scared me, and just I just need to tell somebody. I just need to tell somebody sometimes.
I will give you my word that I will do my best not to lawyer you, because I get that you are dealing with a lot of grays right now, and lawyering does not help.
And
I will give you the benefit of the doubt.
And I would ask sort of one that isn't on our list here to help not put this on the back burner. That I recognize that I have a habit that we go through these kind of intense things, and we make a little bit of progress, and then it's, whew, all right, let's not talk about it for a while, or let's not do it. And it's a bad habit that I have, and I think we're going to do better if we don't. And I'd ask, let's not back burner this one. And I think the podcast is a really good way.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be really curious to see how people respond to this, because here it is. Like, here's the big, super dark, scary, embarrassing, hairy secret that's now out there in the universe. And I hope add some insight into our relationship, and certainly has just talking about it with you today.
Yeah. I love you.
I love you too.
Well, guys, I think that just about does it here. Thanks for hanging in with us for way longer than usual. Next week, we'll come back with all of our updates from this past week and all of our updates from this coming week, too. So next week will be a good one. You can always reach out and get in touch with John and myself at openinguppodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, that has been Opening Up, the podcast where we open up about our open marriage and my sexual proclivities.
What did we call them? Kinks with consequences?
Kinks with consequences. I like that.
Let's
register that domain. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Talk to you soon. Hey, guys. Nikki here. Wow, now that was a marathon. If you liked that episode, please head over to iTunes and leave us a review. It's the best way for new people to find our podcast. And if you'd like to get in touch, you can email us at openinguppodcast@gmail.com. Thanks so much and have a great day. We'll be right back.